All cases are solved with logic. The only logical way to find out if Donna is a cheater is to seduce her, bring her to orgasm, then call Michael and tell him the sad news.
Okay, and are you ready for the show?
Yay, we're ready, Lucy. Please start.
And so I started.
I'm Bert Kreischer, and you're listening to the Homemade Broadcast.
Personnel, this is CBTS. Space vehicle pre-count operation will start on my mark at 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
It is the Homemade Broadcast, HMB Radio, on RadioSt.Pete.com. Welcome back, Will Koontz, with you again. Stressful day it's been, let me tell you. At least I'm not getting dragged off an airplane. That went viral. The poor man's face as he is just dragged off the airplane. Still don't really understand why people are upset with United Airlines about that, because that was cops, right? They had sheriffs or police on their vests. You're mad at the cops, I guess, if anything, right? I don't know, but people are upset, and anybody with a Twitter account means something now. So I guess United sucks. United Airlines can suck it, says everybody on Twitter. By the way, if you're on Twitter, you should follow me. Home_made_man. It's really easy. You can follow Radio St. Pete as well. Just, they're Radio St. Pete. Radio STPETE. That's it. That's all you need to know. Yeah, how you doing? I'm good. I'm fine. It's been a stressful few hours. But, hey, we're back at it here. This podcast is brought to you by Sly Bar, 2061 Central Avenue, slybar.com. And I saw they painted over their sign. That's up on there at 2061 Central Avenue. The redesign is on the inside. They extended the bar all the way down to the window there. It's pretty neat if you haven't been in there. And they got food and, you know, all that good stuff. So I believe it's going to be called something, but I don't want to say the new name in case Joe has changed his mind. So it's still Sly Bar for now, but expect that to change in the near future. They're going to rebrand and switch it up. And Truvy Salon and Spa, 8908 4th Street North, Unit B. Call and make an appointment, 727-329-9751. And Truvy Salon and Spa, that's .com, T-R-U-V-Y, salonandspa.com. And I can actually vouch for them because I went in there and got my hair trimmed up by Chrissy, and she did a terrific job. So I actually know what I'm talking about. Proudly, I can endorse them to their fullest potential. So go see her, make an appointment, because she does good work. And you want a good haircut for this new summer season. So this week on the program, we have a man named Shelby Suggs. He's an interesting guy. We had a long conversation. He was in the healthcare field for a long time. And now he's playing music. And we talked a lot about music and healthcare. Believe it or not, got schooled on some healthcare things, maybe some misconceptions that I thought existed that maybe are some more complicated and some less complicated than they appear. And ain't that always the way it is? So make sure you follow HMB Radio on Facebook too. HMB Radio on Facebook. That's it. Hotel Mike Bravo Radio and Radio St. Pete again. Facebook.com/RadioSt.Pete, STPETE. Easy as that. Still got stickers. Got a lot of stickers. So if you want one, email me, thehomemadebroadcast@RadioSt.Pete.com. Easy as that. If you want to leave a message or a text message for the show, easy enough, 813-693-2124. Be sure to subscribe to HMB Radio to keep up to date. It's really easy. Wherever you get your podcasts, that's where it's at. Just search HMB Radio, and then you got it. It's on your phone, and it's just as easy as that. Okay, let's get into it this week. Thanks for tuning in. Shelby Suggs, the interesting combo of healthcare and music. All right, Shelby Suggs, welcome, sir.
Will, how are you, sir? Thank you very much. It's quite an honor for you to have me out here today.
Not a problem, not a problem. I actually got your email that was sent to Joe, sent to me, because he thought you'd be an interesting guy to talk to. And here you are today, on short notice.
On short notice.
Managed to drive down in rush hour traffic just to be here.
Well, traveling from, as you know, Tampa to here at this time of the day is just something that most people don't like to do, much less want to do. But my GPS saved me and took me a quicker route, so hopefully I'm not too late.
Yeah, it would be impossible for me to drive anywhere, just about anywhere, especially outside of St. Pete. Without the GPS at this point, which is not a good thing.
Alright.
Is that your cell phone there going bananas?
Yeah, I gotta turn my cell phone off. I'm doing something very unprofessional, Will. I just sat
You're a popular guy. It's been ringing off the hook since you got here.
I apologize.
No, no worries, man. No worries. So you, where do you live?
Right now I'm living in Tampa, right off of Florida Avenue in between Bears and Fletcher.
Oh, okay. That's quite a hike. Yeah, you pretty much can't get any farther driving here than where you're at.
My plans are to move back to St. Pete Beach, which I lived there from 95 to 2007.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where my heart is. So me and a couple of friends are renting a very nice home on the intercoastal side of St. Pete Beach. So we have a dock and we got a boat and a pool. And the best way to make it, at least in my times today, with the income when you retire and all that, is to team up with people that you trust, that you love, that are family anyways. And like I think two of us or three of us are going to rent this place, and I'll probably spend less than what I'm paying right now where I'm living in Tampa.
Mm-hmm.
And probably have much more.
Yeah. Hey, I forgot to tell you before we get started, where did you park?
I parked out here, but I have a handicap thing.
Did you park on the side of the building?
Yeah, they can't do anything in handicap.
Yeah, they'll tow you.
That's okay. Don't let them tow me, and I'll pursue it because I know the head judge of Hillsborough County, so I'm good.
Let's get you a parking spot. I really hate for you to get towed down here.
I won't get towed. It's illegal for you to tow anybody who has a handicap sticker.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. We'll push it. My neighbors might be pissed, though.
Oh, that's okay. Well, I can't do anything about your neighbors, but legally, I'm legally okay with parking there because handicap has no area that you can't park.
All right, that's good to know. I'm glad we have that on audio too.
So, and if they do, then I will go to court and I won't get an attorney, and I will defend myself. And I guarantee you that the person who towed me, I mean, I'll get it all cleared up. Trust me. As a matter of fact, I live on the edge, anyways. I like those challenges.
All right, fair
and
enough.
It sets the stage for the future people that need to be able to use services like that.
Yeah. So tell me about, why you're here today.
Well, I don't know. I guess Joe and I found each other on surfing the net and stuff, and we got to talking to each other, and he told me that he had started a radio show, and I noticed the name of it, stpeteradio.com, for example.
RadioStPete.com,
yeah. Because I was kind of surfing around, finding out what's going on, and I have a few friends that have websites that I don't know if you're familiar with GoTonight.com.
Okay, yeah.
Sherry, she has that. She invited me to her takeoff party. And here again, too, I don't know why, because I was not even planning out regularly, much less anybody that she would know.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess through word of mouth, they say, hey, you know, you want to put him on the invitation list. And so for her, when I went to her party, I did a improv song about her party and how I got there and what I had to go through to get there. And she was impressed with that. So we've been friends ever since. And she's got an awesome site. So all the way from Sarasota down to Orlando, over to maybe Dade City, Zephyr Hills, Spring Hill area. She covers that whole territory on what clubs and restaurants are hiring live music, who's playing there. And she'll usually give you tonight and tomorrow night as when you ask for it.
Yeah. So you were involved in music in the 80s, and then you kind of had this lapse, but now you're getting back into it now.
Yes, sir. And, you know, people say that it's like riding a bicycle. It's not, okay? I always wanted to do music, but healthcare made more money, unfortunately. And did I do it for the money? Of course not, okay? I did it because I care about people and I care about individuals, and I'm one of those people that would be singing that Coke commercial song with the rest of the musicians and holding hands, because I do believe there should be peace and love and happiness throughout the world. And why there's so much hatred and prejudice and all the other things going on, I have no idea.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's because human beings at their hearts are animals, really.
I think it goes back to the caveman days. You know, we're hunters and the women are gatherers. And don't take that wrong, ladies, whoever's listening, okay? But it does. I mean, when I went through my bachelor's and master's program and, you know, learned about world religion and things of that sort, it opened my eyes to say, well, maybe some of these aren't, you know, urban legends and or myths. Maybe it does stem from that, because I know as far as, you know, pheromones and being attracted to somebody, that's for real, science-wise. So I am that kind of guy that I don't believe much until I see it, and I see it from a credible source.
Yeah.
It's interesting how people pull up, you know, like MD.com, and I want to find out what's wrong with me.
Mm-hmm. Well, oh, WebMD. Yeah.
And I'm not knocking it, okay, when I say this. It's just that, come on, let's face it, two guys like you and I started a website and decided to do it, made money on it. Are they the experts to ask? Probably not.
I would hope they're doctors, but there's only, I mean, you plug it into an algorithm, right, where you kind of, you have all these symptoms listed, then you put it in, and you're going to get a lot of rubbish in there that the algorithm just can't sift out.
Number one, you got to know what to say and what to ask, because I don't know if people are hip to this or not, but 20 years ago, the government started telling us by using the word managed care. Mm-hmm. Some people thought that was an insurance term, okay? Started telling us 20 years ago, there's going to be a point in healthcare where you have to manage yourself. You have to manage your own care, all right? And how are most people going to do that if they're not medical people? Most people are ignorant to medicine. And ignorant
when you say manage your own healthcare, that means, do you mean diagnose yourself with stuff?
No, what I mean is you have to know signs and symptoms of what's going on with you. And by the time you walk into the doctor's office, write down a list of what intelligent questions you're going to ask this individual to back up what you think might be happening. Because we see our primary doctor, if we're healthy, what, two or three times a year, maybe?
Mm-hmm,
okay?
Maybe.
And, oh, he knows me. I've had him for 20 years. He's got thousands of patients.
Right, right.
And even though he might know your name and your wife and all that, he doesn't know you.
He's met you 20 times briefly. Yeah.
And so it becomes a game of charades. All right. So it feels like, sounds like, and by the time... And see, they don't want to spend time in the room in there, because every time you go see them with capitated care billing, they lose money when they see you, not make money.
Really? Even with insurance, when they just bill the insurance, whatever they want?
See, here's how the system works, and most hospitals hate it when I get on the air like this and tell the truth, all right? But the way capitated care works is they've already got their money at the beginning of the month from the four insurance companies they're working with to take care of a certain population of people, all right? So now the trick is, if you do real good health care, doctor, these patients won't be coming to see you. And the better you do, the less patients you'll see and the more money you'll make. But it doesn't work that way, does it?
Mm-hmm.
So when you call to get a doctor's appointment, that's why they tell you, well, it's 2, 3, 4 months down the line. Because they hope that you just finally give up on it or get better, either one, and they don't see you.
Yeah. I've had that problem. I don't really have that problem with my primary doctor, although, like I said, I don't really go to the doctor that often. But I do have a good example with dentistry. I got this through the marketplace, healthcare marketplace. I bought this plan for $8 a month, and I said, wow, that seems too cheap.
Too cheap, yeah.
And it was too cheap for a reason, because it really wasn't even insurance. It's a discount card, essentially. So I went under the understanding how they sold it to me was it would be a $20 copay, and that's what I pay. So I went in, and then x-rays were $20, and then the cleaning was $20, and that, which is reasonable, by the way. I think $40 that I got out with is okay. But
well,
also,
if you know the other side of the equation, what is it costing the x-rays and all for that physician to do that job? See,
right.
That's the whole thing with business. If I know the other side of the equation on what you paid for something and you're selling me something, I have an edge, don't I? If I have no clue what you paid for that vehicle or that device or that procedure, you can give me any price. I have no clue, right?
I would imagine this seemed like one of those things where it's like a mill, where the insurance company has it worked out with this particular, because they put me in this place in Tyrone Mall, and I was like, that's weird. That doesn't seem right.
Well,
it wasn't a real doctor's office. Yeah.
You know, the space to rent the place. So.
Right, right. And then the other place was this. It's called Bright Now. And it just seems like one of those mills where they just, and the care was weird, like the people in there were weird. I didn't really have a great experience.
And, you know, towards the past maybe 3 or 4 years of my healthcare career, when I finally said I've had it, I quit, okay, was when I'd be behind closed doors with all the other big shots, okay. And the people that were on the top of the list, all the physicians that were on top of the list as ones that we were thinking about getting rid of, were the ones that provided the best care that anybody could provide.
Mm.
And the ones that didn't even see the patients, much less care for them very well, were on the bottom. They're safe. They'll be at that hospital forever.
Just because they saw so many patients and were able to cycle through?
No, because the people I worked with, like Dr. Schwartz, Dr. Ebel, and people like that, Dr. Malloy, they were great wizard pulmonologists and intensivists and cardiopulmonary physicians and cardiologists that they did everything in their in their power to order the medications and the testing and all that they knew they should do in order to properly diagnose you, to properly treat you, and give you an awesome care plan.
So why were they the first ones to go?
Because every time they ordered that test, it cost the hospital money.
Wow. Even with people with insurance, they just can't bill insurance.
Even with, yeah. I mean, everybody says, but I give a copayment, all that. That copayment doesn't pay for anything.
Yeah, nothing. Okay? It's a joke.
And so this, I'm going to stamp out one urban legend today on your show is hospitals and doctor's offices and places like that are not making money on health care. The ones that are making money are the insurance groups. They're making money because they make deals with these doctors where they take 30 or 40% of that income and keep it. And then sprinkle it out between all these doctors and say, now you've got thousands of patients you got to see every month.
See, I kind of was under the assumption that part of the problem with our healthcare system is that you can have uninsured people go to the emergency room who don't have money. They can, they'll usually just give those people a charity type of case where they sign it off. And then the cost gets passed along to insurance companies because they're picking up the tab. That's why Band-Aids are $100 in the hospital.
It's called, the term you're using is cost shifting.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And here's the truth now. Okay, I'm going to blow your mind on what you've presumed all these years and what people talk about every day at restaurants and bars. I hear them all the time. Okay? But in the reality world is, it's set up to such a point there where if you order any test or you do anything or they see you at all, it costs, they've already got the apple pie delivered that month, for example, to keep it simple. And every time they order an x-ray, they got to cut a little piece off of that radiology department. Or if they consult a cardiologist because they're an intensivist and they're not a cardiologist, they got to pay that cardiologist for the consult.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it just builds from there. And, with that person that doesn't pay. Let's talk about that, okay? The reason why the Band-Aid is $2 and all this stuff is not because of the fact that, the non-payer is because there's a little secret here. All hospitals, not just Tampa General, who's a state hospital, but all hospitals get subsidized for taking care of indigent care. And they have a certain number quota, and I won't share that with you, okay? But once they meet that quota, they get that money. If they don't meet that quota by letting certain indigent people get cared for, then they don't get any money.
What does that mean, indigent people?
In other words, people, like you said, that come in that can't afford health insurance or to pay the bill.
Mm-hmm.
And you say write it off. I used to write off a lot of them because we got paid through the state for meeting that quota. But here's the problem. Once you've met that quota, all the VPs come to you as a director and say, okay, that's it. We met it. And there's only two ways to fix health care. And it's just simple because my medical economics teacher taught me this. He said, you're going to have to sit here through the whole semester, but I'm going to teach you something. In 5 minutes, it's going to teach you the whole class. He says, number one, you increase everybody's premiums. Well, nobody wants that, right? Okay. Or you ration care. Nobody wants that. Morally and ethically, that's horrible. That's it. I just told you, okay? One or the other. And you say, what about those people who aren't paying? Well, there's such a low percentage, believe it or not, that they don't impact us. It's almost like taxes. Out of all the taxes that we pay each year to the government, who pays the most? 20% of the rich people? And when I say rich, that's 500,000 plus a year? Or is it us blue-collar workers that make less than $500,000 a year? So what majority pays the 80% of the taxes? It's a 50-50 quite, you know, chance.
Mm-hmm.
And the answer is the rich people. And people go, no way, because they got ways of writing off things. Yes way.
Yeah.
I mean, I was in a 57% tax bracket when I was working in the hospital. 57, which meant even if I made $1,000, I got $500.
Right. Yeah, and that doesn't seem fair.
So, and people don't think of it that way. They think because you're rich, you got connections and accountants, and I do have an accountant, same accountant I've had for 25 years, that takes care of me and teaches me about the new laws that come out so I can stay on top of things. But the thing with taxes is when you do taxes, you want it to come to zero. You don't want to owe anything, nor do you want money back. Then you won't get audited and nobody will say anything. But there's a lot of people that find that as a savings account. You know, I want to put more dependent codependents down or whatever on the W-4 form because at the end of the year, I get $2,000 back.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's not too smart because you'd rather have that $2,000 during the year. If you want to invest it, invest it. Even CDs or whatever pay 1% or 2%.
Mm-hmm.
Don't let the government invest your money.
Yeah. I think a lot of people, too, are under the impression that if you're wealthy or rich now, that you had an unfair advantage. It was given to you by your dad or something.
I can't tell you how many times that people told me in my positions, oh, they gave him that job because they felt sorry for him.
Mm-hmm.
Or they have to hire so many handicapped people to meet the quota.
Yeah.
There's no such quota.
All right.
Okay.
Right.
Yes, they want you to be diversified in the workforce, but there's no law at all. This is the state of Florida. It's the right to work in the state of Florida, which means I can fire you and say I don't like you. In fact, you wear glasses.
Mm-hmm.
And I can get away with that in Florida.
Yeah.
So the right to work law still exists. And no, I didn't get promoted because I was disabled and or handicapped looking. No, I worked hard for it. I went to college for 16 years, which I hate school. But I knew that I liked nice cars. I like to date nice women, okay? And I like nice places to live. And that's not going to ever happen with a dream, because really it's a dream of being a entertainer at that time.
Yeah.
Well, now I can do it because the healthcare system is backwards. And when you get told by, and I'm going to say this because this is public information, and it's nothing that I have against the institution, but it'll shock people. I worked for hospice for 5 years as a pulmonary consultant. The 12 doctors that worked for hospice gave me total carte blanche to write any order I wanted to, including IV starts, drips, everything a doctor would order. And in 24 hours, they had to come and co-sign for my orders. Because they found out how much I knew about medicine, they said, we're wasting time for them to call us. And I said, yeah, just do what you do, man.
So you don't have to be an MD to do that?
No, absolutely not. See, respiratory therapists have a little bit of edge because they have to have a medical director, which we had. That's the law in the state of Florida. If you run any respiratory therapist at all, they have to have a medical director. And the reason why is our practices are based on what medical directors sign off on. So there's been places I've done all the invasive procedures at that hospital, my staff, because, see, the doctors stopped getting paid for putting in swan ganz catheters or A-lines. There used to be procedures they got paid for, so they came in and did them. Then that stopped. They said, we're not going to pay for that. We're just going to pay you like a DRG, the diagnosis, and that's it. Well, if you're not going to pay me and I'm doing all this liability insurance, then I'm going to get rid of my liability insurance and stop doing it.
Mm.
And administration's like, wait a minute, you're a doctor. You have to do it under your oath.
Yeah, right. That's what I was going to say. Isn't it against their oath?
No.
Do no harm?
Right. But they're not doing any harm. They're just refusing to do procedures and not getting paid for it.
Can't that do harm, though, if you don't do a procedure?
Well, if the hospital doesn't find out a solution, and that's when the doctor said Shelby and his group can take over these procedures. And the medical director said, okay, I'll sign off on it.
Mm-hmm.
So we put in chest tubes, A-lines, ICP lines in the brain. I mean, I went into surgery and did balloon pumping and perfusion machine. And those are the days that it wasn't as strict as it is now, so you say, but everybody has a perception that the laws are stricter, but really, it's more loose now than it ever was, okay? But yeah, before perfusionists were even called perfusionists, they let respiratory therapists like myself go down and run the perfusion machine on some of the first open heart programs in Miami with Dr. Sherman.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So I've learned things, and I'm an inquisitive guy. I'm not a guy that just gets a job like a director of all these departments and say, okay, I'm in charge now. I'll be in my office and come see me. I'm doing a budget. I'm doing a schedule, whatever. No, when I go to a code and somebody's having a cardiac arrest or arrest and the doctors are doing things to them, I'm asking my friends who are the doctors, why did you give colloids instead of crystalloids? Why did you push that instead of that? And over time of 38 years of doing that, you get pretty darn good at what you do.
Right, right. Shelby Suggs is joining me on the Homemade Broadcast this week. So why did you leave medicine now?
Well, I was going to say I worked for a hospice. I won't tell you which one, but it is one of the biggest ones in the United States. And I got called into the office one day, and I was reprimanded because my patients were living too long according to the national standards.
And they were like, I'm out. I'm done with this.
I said, you got to be kidding me. At that point, that was the final straw that I had to hear, that I thought hospice was. I did everything I could for the patient if they wanted to live so that they could see their grandson graduate or go to a play that their son would. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Now, those patients that didn't want to go on any further, then I did my first visit, and I said, okay, have a nice day, and I left.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, I honored their wish. But if I had patients that said, man, Shelby, do whatever you can to, I want to live, man. I love
some that didn't want to be there.
You know?
Yeah.
So I learned different tricks in the hospital, such as BiPAP machines are wonderful. People don't even understand BiPAP machines. They think, oh, it's this big mass you put on your face and it hurts. And I tried that one time and I never do it. BiPAP helps thousands of people every day. And there's no big mass you have to put on your face. I mean, I can put little cannulas underneath your nose. And I don't even need a full sleep study to determine whether you got a problem at night or not. But these are people that sleep 8, 10, 12 hours a day and still wake up every day and tired and exhausted and dragging, going, what's wrong with me? Most of them say, well, it's my age. I'm getting older. What do you expect? No, it's not that at all. It's a sleep disorder.
Mm-hmm. So you have a look like a rock star. You don't really look like a guy who's been doing medicine for a long time. You got long hair. You got the cross. You got the earrings. You got the whole lot there. So now, was this a new thing, or did you always kind of have this look in your job?
I could not have this look in my job. I had to be Mr. Gentleman Quarterly, okay? I had the very short hair, Armani suits, white lab coat with my initial. Oh, yeah, the whole bit. I looked very, very, very professional. That's what one of my jokes are with some of my fans. I said, I'm telling you information. I know I look like I just crawled out from a Howard Franklin Bridge living under there. But I said, really, I'm not. And this all started to look, number one, because of rock and roll. And number two, though, it's almost like a rebellion towards corporate compliance.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So when did you start getting back into music? Because you said you opened, you had a couple bands in the 80s, and you opened for Cyndi Lauper. And...
Well, you know, on the side of running two businesses, I started one business where nobody would take pneumonia patients home. And the doctors came to me and said, we got to get them out of here because they've run out of the funding. And they're not doing anything but sitting in that room every day. How depressing is that, right? And I said, well, I know one thing I'm going to start doing. I'm going to take them out to the zoo and the parks and stuff. The hospital freaked out when I said that. You can't do that. Yeah, I can. With portable vents. All I got to do is get permission from them and sign, you know, a waiver. And when I started doing that, 50% of our vent patients started getting weaned off the ventilators. Interesting, isn't it? Because
mm-hmm.
now they see what they're missing out there, and that's motivation. And then the doctor said, you got to figure out some way. Now, this is before corporate compliance came into factor where nowadays a director cannot make a deal with, his own business within that business. You know, that's kind of shady, okay? But back then, it wasn't. You know, you could do anything. You could do two jobs at the same place and have different, you know, objectives. And it was fine, as long as they didn't cross each other. So the doctor said, you got to figure out some way, Shelby, to get these patients home. Well, nobody would take the liability for taking life support equipment home and teaching families how to manage that vent with their loved one. That was just scary stuff. Even though we had the portable vents available, nobody. And second of all, none of the DME companies wanted to pay extra for that respiratory therapy salary.
Right.
So I went on the net. And everything's public information, believe it or not. And I found out what Medicare pays a DME company to have a vent patient in there per month. At that time, it was $425. So I went to three different DME companies, and I said, I'll tell you what. I'll do your vent patients at home. I'll take them home. I'll do everything. All you got to do is drop off supplies, and all I want is $200 a month. So you get $225 for just a delivery guy dropping off equipment. And plus you get to market the fact that we now do vents. That'll increase your volume tremendously. And it worked. And at one time, I had 18, 20 ventilators out there going. So that's pretty good chump change on the side.
Sure.
You know? And the hospital loved me because now I got the patients out, didn't they?
Mm-hmm.
So it was a win-win-win-win.
Right.
Okay. And the first week or two that you do that, it's very difficult. It all depends on the patient. It all depends on the family, the support team, and all that. Because if they don't have a support team, it's much harder. Okay? But, you know, because you have to actually teach this family and that patient how to troubleshoot alarms and things that happen to them that it's not scary. If the thing pops off your trach or your endotracheal tube, you're not going to die right away, okay? Just put it back on and start breathing again.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And then there was a time that they wouldn't let patients talk. They said, well, no, you know, I know there's valves out there that allow them to talk, but we don't have that kind of money. I said, for $80? Are you serious? So I made it a protocol that any patient that got put on a vent that was able to talk, they got to pass a mirror valve put on. And that's the valve that the gentleman who's a physiologist that teaches a master's program in a wheelchair, and he can just move one eye, and his name escapes me right now, but he invented the passive mirror valve for himself. And that's the same valve that we use today. And it allows the patient on a ventilator to talk. So if you're in a hospital and they say he's got an airway in and he can't talk to you, that's not true. Ask for a valve. They can talk to you.
Yeah. So I want to, in the last few minutes, I want to talk about what you're doing now just to kind of promote that. So tell me about the music that you're doing.
Well, you know, I'm an old man. I really am, you know, compared to national standards and all that and life expectancies and all. So I didn't have a whole lot of time to find out where the doorway of the local music scene was. So it just so happened that, you know, one day I was walking on New Year's Eve in Ybor City with my brother, because he's single as well. And we're trying to find, you know, a place that's happening for New Year's Eve there. And there happens to be two guys, an acoustic guitar and a bass, doing a duo right in front of the theater there at Ybor. And I tell my brother, I'm going to go over and talk to these guys. He said, oh, do you know them? I said, no, but I'm about to. Because once you get to know me, that's the kind of guy I am. And that's why I'm late all the time to places, except if you're paying me, okay? Because I'm usually stopping and talking to somebody and trying to help them and or, you know, because the more people that know you, right, life becomes easier. And you never know who you're talking to. If you help somebody for 5 minutes and I'm late and come to find out that person is like it was when I moved to Jacksonville, I mean, I moved in with the great-great-granddaughter of DuPont Paint because I couldn't find a motel or a hotel or an apartment to live in, and my job was about to start at Orange Park Medical Center. And then all of a sudden, somebody on the phone said, well, I know a lady. Her name is Carrie Master.
Wait, we're getting off in a tangent again. All Let's right. talk about how you got set up with this band you're playing in now.
Well, right now, I went to 5 people that I thought had it going on in music. Okay, one of them being Steve Harvey, Dean Germain, Betty Fox, people that I thought had it going on. I went and I said, I called them up. They didn't know who I was. I said, can I have lunch with you for an hour so I can pick your brain? It's on me. And they're like, who is this guy? And out of the 5 or 6 people I called, only one person never followed through. God, I ain't going to meet with this guy. It's the same person now that wants to be my friend. Okay? But the other 5, they said, we don't know who you are, but man, if you want to get the music, man, sure, I'll meet you.
And what do you play? What instrument do you play?
I started out with the drums, and then I started singing as I played the drums, so it was natural for me to sing and play the drums. And people say that most drummers don't sing. Well, that's not true. You can go all the way back to Gary Lewis and the Playboys.
It's unusual, but it's not revolutionary.
Because ambidextrous, should I say, and singing and doing the
words. Yeah, that's hard to do.
It's hard.
Sure.
And now I see people like the Reese Brothers, where Kevin plays the keyboard and the drums and sings at the same time, which I'm working on right now.
Mm-hmm.
So I play the drums and sing, and that's what I've always done all my life, on the side, you know, just for fun. And then I started a band, and like you heard, in the 80s, and it was called As Is, and I told you that story, how that happened. And it was like the monkey story. You've heard the monkey story. 2 of us were true musicians, The other two were just friends. They didn't know how to play anything. So the guitar player taught the bass player how to play bass, and the keyboard player how to play a little Casio toy keyboard. They had a wounder on it, but you might have remembered it was white, and it didn't have all the keys on it. And we played that through a PA straight through, and that, and then we sat in the garage and wrote 38 songs, me and Rob, and we all learned them. And then that's when everybody says, you can't play the circuit. Everybody wants to hear covers. Isn't that weird, huh? Because today's totally different.
I don't know. There's a lot of people that play covers. Whenever I'm in a bar, it's some dude with an acoustic guitar playing a cover.
And you know why? Because you make more money and tips and all when you do covers.
Right.
You do your originals, no matter how awesome they
Nobody
are.
Nobody cares.
Well, yeah. It's the first time they heard it, so
right.
They might say, that was a good song. But people are like, that's why my band is called Time Turn Back, okay? It's not because I play old stuff and I'm an old man, okay? It's because every time you hear a song, it reminds you of a place that you were at with maybe a loved one, a significant other, or whatever, and that may be a good feeling or a bad feeling, but it's still emotional. And that's why I call the band Time Turn Back, not because he's old, so he plays old stuff.
Right. I think you can get away with playing originals if you're in a full, if you're in an electric outfit. But if you're playing an acoustic guitar, well, I mean, you're plugging in so people can hear you. There's just something about acoustic guitar where you just covers just work better.
Well, actually, you can do it with both because if you come see Greg and I on our duos, he's got an acoustic guitar with a pickup, and I got bongos, and we'll do songs, you know, even covers that'll blow your mind as far as they're playing Led Zeppelin. I mean, really? Without electric? I mean, unplugged-wise, if you meet the right talent and you meet the right creativity of people, I mean, and we use no digital mixing, no loops to help us. And I know a lot of people do, and I'm not knocking them for it, because most people say, man, these two guys sounded great. They sound like a 10-piece band. Well, try sound like a 10-piece band with just two of you raw, with no effects on your vocals, no effects on the digital, no bass behind you looping. That's... And try to hold up the platform and the song and the vocals and keep it going.
Right.
Without it dropping out from underneath you.
Yeah, I feel bad for a lot of the people that are playing in bars because nobody's paying attention to them. They're just like, I try to give them a little, hey, you know, nice job. But it's just depressing hearing those two people clap. I'm just like, oh, what do you, I mean, I guess you're getting paid $100 or something for a few hours, but
I'm one of those people that I put on such a show. That if the crowd is ignoring me, I will actually get out from behind my kit and start playing on their tables and their salt shakers and their, you know, and I take a risk because the owner could say, you're never coming back.
Yeah. Where do you play at now? Like, where's your regular spot?
We play at CJ's on Treasure Island with Sherry and them. We play at Gaspar's Patio on 56th Street in Bush. We play at the Front Porch on Florida Avenue in Tampa. We play at Cayman Cove off of Del Mabry. We play at Joe's Whiskey Bar and Zephyr Hills. We play at the Fried Penguin. There's a lot of places.
How many gigs do you do a week?
Well, right now it bounces anywhere between 2 and 3 a week, but I'm trying to get to like 4 or 5 a week.
Yeah.
That'd be good. And then, of course, I would love to hook up something with a radio show again, too, and do both because the marketing aspect and the music kind of go hand in hand. So
sure.
Who knows?
Sure. What would your radio show be like if you could have one?
I'm not sure. Right now I went to my friends and I said, I know when I was with the Party Pirate for 3 years, my platform was healthcare and live music and all. But I don't know. I mean, I don't think people understand the healthcare part of it, and they don't believe that somebody with my credentials could actually answer any question over the phone as long as they didn't tell me who the provider was and their name for HIPAA requirements. So I got a few call-ins, but do you know how golden that is for somebody to say free advice and free way for you to make a right turn instead of a left so that you don't screw up? But I guess people say nothing's for free, I guess. Well, I'm for real. I'm for free. I don't charge. I get people disability approved the first time. That's another rumor. Every time you file for disability, you always get denied. No, you don't. I even processed my own paperwork when I retired. And it's not because I got disability because I've had this problem all my life. It's not based on diagnosis. So there's all kinds of stuff. But back to the music. So I went to Steve Harvey one day and I said, I'm frustrated. I've been to two bands because everybody who you pick, of course, you want awesome musicians, right? Well, everybody else does too. So if they're missing a bass player or a drummer one night, they may book your bass player. And then all of a sudden you get a gig coming up afterwards. Now you can't do that gig because your bass player's gone.
Yeah. Yeah, that always amazes me when bands, like, get together, practice, go do shows, because it's not you. I mean, you have to finagle four other people or something to get with you on time. It's always fascinating to me.
So today's world is different, and I'll tell you how it is. Number one, you know, maybe the ones that aren't well-known practice, okay, or maybe, you know, wannabes practice, but the two musicians that I'm playing with right now, and I mean this in all proudness and all respect of them, because I'm in awe every time I'm able to get up on stage with them. They don't spend time going to your house to practice. That's money to them. They don't get paid for it, okay? And if you don't know how to blend with people already, what are you practicing for? So I may give a list of songs to people that play with me and say, hey, go listen to these songs so you know them. But we never get together.
How do you do originals, though, if you're not getting together and hanging?
Because I send them my originals, or I send them Greg's originals to listen to, and that's how they learn them. And I want every show to be different. I want every song to kind of have that twist of that performer. Yeah. That's why Steve Harvey said, just be Shelby Suggs, market Shelby Suggs, and do all kinds of projects, and you'll never be disappointed, and you'll be doing musicians a favor because you go to them and say, hey, if you're not... Like the other, like maybe 6 months ago, I had the bass player for Soul Circus Cowboys play bass for me, and you know at Cayman Cove. And the reason why I got that is I know Jason, the drummer, real well. You know Soul Circus Cowboys, right?
I don't think so.
They're big time in Tampa. They tour. I mean, they've already got supporters. They don't have anything to worry about right now. And a bunch of videos on YouTube, and they're country and all country rock. Okay. But they're on every radio show I can even imagine all the time. And they got plenty of videos out, and they're making decent money, and they tour a lot. And the drummer does open mics for me because, yes, famous people still do open mics and open jams. Yeah, they do, especially if they're going to places that people are awesome there because it gives them... Now that's
good networking. Yes, you might meet somebody.
Exactly. Yeah. That's why they do it. Mm-hmm. And plus, if you want to talk practice... Maybe that's kind of a practice, you know what I mean? To get together with a trombone player or a saxophone player that you've never played with before and see if he can gel with you.
Right.
You know,
right.
Do your stuff. So anybody who ever, and I don't mean this in a snobbish way, I'm trying to get to the chase, but anybody who mentions to me or any of the musicians I play with, hey, so where do you guys practice? We go, ah, never mind. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Because obviously a person is not understanding of today's world and music and, that you don't practice anymore.
Yeah. If people wanted to find your music, where could they look?
I am totally out in the open. My first name is Shelby, S-H-E-L-B-Y. The last name is Suggs, S-U-G-G-S. And I'm so open that I get hacked once in a while on my page and all from smart guys that think it's funny to change my settings and all that. Same thing with YouTube, Shelby, S-H-E-L-B-Y, S-U-G-G-S, Suggs. And so I went public maybe 8 months ago because... Some of the professionals I work with said, until you go public, you know, just friends of friends, it's going to stay within that population. You got to get people everywhere, you know, worldwide to know who you are, and you never know what will happen.
Yeah, and is those YouTube videos from your band Time Turn back on YouTube as well?
It's a combination of a bunch of them. When I play with Greg Norris, that we call ourselves Norris and Suggs. When I play with my band, it's Time Turn Back Band with different people that you might say, hey, that's the bass player from Soul Circus. Or, hey, that's Phil Stokes. He used to be with Pure Prairie League. You know, so that's what's fun, too.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, what shall we do and play with them? and then you'll see me with Twinkle. Twinkle is a female singer that's a great rock and blues singer. She's been around for 38 years. She's on her 15th album, I think. And yet you'll see me at Daiquiri Deck rocking with her, and she's singing backup vocals for me, and I'm doing my thing, and she's singing with, I mean, it's awesome.
Yeah, right on.
And these are people that say, anytime you're doing a show, if I'm not doing a show myself, I'm in, because
mm-hmm.
I offer them a certain minimum, and I also talk at club owners into feeding us and giving us free water and soda, and plus the fee, and plus the tip, sometimes I just tell the three guys or the two guys that are playing with me, y'all split the tips. I don't want them. I don't need them. And the old expression, it's better to give than to receive. I know it sounds corny, but it's so true.
Mm-hmm,
and if
mm-hmm.
everybody believed that, it would be so good.
World would be a better place. Definitely. Shelby Suggs, thank you for coming in. I appreciate it.
All right. Well, I appreciate you calling me, man.
All right, there we go. Shelby Suggs, thanks for stopping by. If you're listening on Radio St. Pete, stay tuned for the Frank Rivera's Jazz Show, live from Seminole, Florida, and Indie Circuit coming up right after that. Subscribe to HMB Radio Tampa Bay on iTunes, Stitcher, wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you for listening. See you next week. Will Kuntz, Homemade Broadcast. Bye-bye.